Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
This hour on the programme, we're continuing our look ahead to this year's House of Keys general election by speaking to another of the new candidates to come forward. Today's election 2016 candidate interview is 56-year-old Quintin Gill, who will be standing in Douglas East. Good afternoon, Quintin, and welcome to the programme.
Thank you, Stuart. Pleasure
to be. Not seen you for a while because you're not new to politics. You did a term, was it 2005, 2011?
No, I actually was a commissioner in Port St Mary, then I was elected in 2001 in the general election to the
To
represent Rushen. I was returned in 2006, as you say, and then in the 2011 election I was fourth.
I mean, what went wrong? Do you know now what went wrong?
We always knew that June Watson would top the poll. That was a given, because that's local knowledge. Rushen always elect a new member. In this case it was Lawrence Skelly. Doesn't matter who it is, there is always a new member. I've benefited from it.
Yeah.
Phil Gorn benefited, Pam Crowe, Dewan, and this was Lawrence's turn. And so Phil Gorn and I knew that one of us was going out. And
right.
That's politics, no complaints, that's how it is.
Yeah.
The vote stood up. I just have to take it, and it makes you a better person, I think.
Well, is this why you've moved up to Douglas? Because, you know, you want pastures new, really, where you stand half a chance?
No, that's for personal reasons. And I moved to Douglas in 2012. My family are originally from Douglas, so it was very much a coming home in that sense. And I'm very happy living in Douglas and working in Douglas.
All right. Well, tell people who don't know anything about you, tell us a little bit about yourself. I've said you're 56 years old. We know that you're a social worker, were before politics and have been after politics, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But tell us a bit more about yourself, your family background, maybe.
My family are Manx. I was born and grew up in England. And the reason for that is because we forget that in the 1950s and the 1970s particularly, we had periods where the Isle of Man was in really bad financial straits. And lots of people, including my father, had to leave the island to progress a career. He was a chartered engineer, so his career took him away. I came home, as we always were brought up to believe in the Isle of Man as home, in the late 80s, early 90s. Lived in Port St Mary, raised a family in Port St Mary. I was a probation officer at first. I'm qualified as a probation officer, a counsellor, an HE teacher, and as a social worker.
Right.
So, variety of social care backgrounds. Prior to that, I was in the Royal Navy.
Yes.
And the Territorial Infantry in England.
Okay. And you think that, I mean, there are obviously some good people skills in there then that would be useful in politics. What else do you think you can bring to Manx politics?
Well, of course I would say, as the most experienced candidate in Douglas East, I would say experience is, there's no substitute for that. I am the most experienced candidate, and so experience will be top of the list. A commitment to be a full-time member, as I always have done. That's a proven track record, so it's not just a claim. And also a sense of independence, which comes from being part of a team, but at the same time standing up for what you sincerely believe is right, but only having listened to all the arguments and made a very carefully weighed consideration.
You're an independent again, so does the idea of party politics not appeal to you?
I haven't seen any experience of party politics on the Isle of Man which has encouraged me to join a party, quite the opposite. I had hoped that the Liberal Vanham Party, who I have for some of their members, Kate Beecroft, I think has been a coherent opponent and scrutineer of government, but the party has signally failed in that regard, unfortunately. Perhaps with a change of personnel at the next election, that might be a different proposition. But to answer your question about party politics, no, I think that the independent system can work as long as you have people who will be both team players and independent and get that balance right.
Well, and how do you get that balance? I mean, the current system is it's almost a closed shop where people are almost guaranteed to be given some sort of a departmental position with the salary enhanced, and that almost sort of buys the complicity, doesn't it?
I think that's probably a fair observation. Certainly there is a degree of patronage, we've seen, I would suggest, in this last Parliament especially, where there has been a signal lack of concerted and coherent opposition and scrutiny to the government, and that's not good for the government. They might think it is on a day-to-day basis, but generally what happens in those circumstances, as we might be seeing in the United Kingdom, is that the government feels they can get away with anything because there's nobody holding them to proper account, and therefore they try to get away with everything, or they become a bit lazy or a bit arrogant.
Yeah, I mean, it's only the Lib Vans, effectively, that are a backbench who are questioning and holding government to account. Peter Caron's retiring, so I'm sure that Kate Beecroft, if she's re-elected, will carry that torch on. But shouldn't there be a system whereby we are guaranteed almost a default opposition to scrutinise government policy?
It should be a duty of every independent member of Tynwald, every member of the House of Keys.
But if they're a member of the club because of the membership of a department...
No, I don't accept that you have to do that. You made the proposition earlier that that's effectively what happens,
yeah.
and I'm not taking an issue with that. What I'm saying in response is it doesn't have to be that way.
Right.
Certainly,
so you can
I've
be a member of a department and you can still oppose government policy?
Absolutely. Your only loyalty is to that department at that time. And that's quite right. And you can still query things within the department. Obviously, you have to do those privately or resign on a matter of principle.
Yeah.
But your loyalty does not extend to the rest of government, nor should it.
I've realised over the years of doing this programme that things often look very simple from the outside. We all know exactly how we would refurbish the promenade if we were given the chance. We all know how we'd fix all the potholes. We all know how we'd solve the VAT deficit and the pension shortfall. And I believe that once you get inside those problems, if you're one of the people charged with it, it's a lot more difficult than it looks from the outside. Now, you've got the benefit of having spent the last 5 years outside of politics. Are there any easy wins to be made, do you think, within Manx politics? Or have they all gone now? Have we had the easy wins and it's going to be hard graft?
I genuinely do not see that we have had any easy wins. I'd struggle to see them. What government claims and what I experience and my colleagues and my friends experience on a day-to-day basis are two different things more often than not. The examples you cited about the easy answers to the VAT debt crisis, to the pension crisis which is loomed, to the MEA bond, all of those things, if anybody does have an easy answer, please share them with us, because I don't think there are easy answers. But quite simply, and I remember being howled at by government ministers when I said this post-2008 in Tynwald, the simple things that we can do are try to earn more.
Yeah.
This, what do you do? Well, let me personalise this. What do I do when I lost my seat in 2011? Well, you try to earn more. You get a job.
Or you spend less.
You spend less, or you use your savings.
Yeah.
They're the three things. Not rocket science. It's Macaulay economics, but it's fundamentals.
Mm.
Have we spent less? No, we have not. Have we been using our reserves? Definitely we have. Have we been earning more? If we have, really, it's not been a fair and equitable process which has led to that. So we've increased charges, we've increased fees, we've increased fines. That's easy, it's cheap, but it's not fundamental.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, the key thing is, are we spending less? Are we actually even having the debate about what government should be doing, how we should be doing it, why we should be doing it? And repeated, Tony Brown, Alan Bell, their administrations have repeatedly either refused to make eye contact with the problem or blanked it with some frankly nonsensical idea of we won't have slash and burn. Now let me ask you a question in return, Stu, if I may. What does slash and burn actually mean?
It means cutting the headcount of government-employed people by a large percentage and causing all sorts of problems in that you're throwing people on the dole, you know, people would lose their houses, and et cetera, et cetera. So it's not a simple thing of saying we'll sack 25% of the workforce. There are knock-on effects.
I've never seen that defined in that way. I've heard it trotted out time after time, but I've never heard it defined. And that is one interpretation of it. The other way you could interpret it, we won't have slash and burn, is we'll defer any difficult decisions until the next administration.
Yeah.
And that's what we've seen. Now, I work for the government. I'm a social worker. I know what people on the margins, their lives are like. I know the assistance they need and the support that they require. I understand all of that. But equally, what we're doing at the moment is not sustainable. And until we start looking at basic economics, the route that we're on at the moment, if we carry on it, soon enough the Isle of Man will be bankrupt.
A lot of people tell me that the problem is not necessarily the headcount, but that savings are usually made in the wrong areas, in that it's the frontline services that tend to cop it first, whereas actually we've got this bloated level of middle management. I mean, you've been inside the system. Would you think that that's fair?
I've certainly returned to the social services, and let me preempt what I'm going to say by saying the managers who I'm going to describe in my team, all three of them do an excellent job. They are very professional, very hard working, very thorough. So no criticism of them. But the fact remains, I joined a team three and a half years ago with one manager and a team. Now we have one manager, two junior managers and a bigger team.
Yeah.
And that all costs money.
Yeah.
As I say, it's not about the individuals, our managers in that occasion, but you can replicate that by three other teams. That's all adding up to the bill at the end of the year that the taxpayer have to meet. We're not meeting it on even terms. When the government talks about we've balanced the book, they haven't. You've dipped your reserves.
Yeah.
That's balancing in strict accounting terminology.
Yeah.
But in actual housewife budgeting, it's not bad.
So what do we do? If you're elected, I mean, what's your sort of platform to balance the books then?
The first thing we have to do is be real in accepting that there is a problem. The next thing we have to do is say, let's have an honest, overdue debate about what government does, how we do it, you know, the scope and structure of government. We need to have that debate, and we need to be open-minded about what the outcome will be following from that. And then, rather than getting frightened at the slightest bit of public opposition or unpopularity, we need to see through difficult but well-considered decisions. That's nothing about that is rocket science. Nothing about that is revolutionary. It should be good business sense. We've expanded in the good times. Now we need to contract because the good times are over.
Yeah, I mean, is government trying to do too much? Is there more that could be done by, say, the local authorities?
I believe the local authorities, that transition towards local authorities taking more responsibility is a good move. I do believe there are too many local authorities, and rationalisation could benefit local ratepayers in getting more efficient services. However, but that doesn't mean that government shouldn't be looking to their own business, shouldn't be looking much more rigidly, much more passionately, and much more decisively at what the government does and why they do it.
Biggest threats, what do you think? The pensions, the public sector pensions deficit, do you think that that's maybe the biggest problem we've got at the moment? As part of balancing the books?
I think there are a myriad of threats, some of which we don't fully recognise and understand, but we can anticipate. And you only have to, you've stated the obvious ones. We understand then that the money is, you know, the money is running out and time is running out, and we have debts to meet in the near future. What will be the outcome from Brexit? Who can say? What will be the outcome from the Panama Papers and all that's gone on with that, where the offshore islands, offshore tax regimes will come under further scrutiny? We don't know. There's a myriad of potential difficulties. What I do know is that we shouldn't say ouch until you've actually been punched. So let's not panic ourselves into making rash decisions, but let's be a lot more clear about saying we need to put our house in order domestically.
You say that, you know, one of the things that we can do to balance the books is to make more money. I mean, every would-be politician is saying, yes, we need to make the Isle of Man more competitive. Where, though, given the geographical location we've got, given the problems with a skilled workforce and all the rest of it, that there are surely only so many niches that the Isle of Man can inhabit, aren't there?
Yes, there are, and I've not heard anybody else, including people with this political responsibility, giving it a clear, simple answer, because I don't believe there is a clear and simple answer. What I think we can do is stop looking at fanciful propositions and start nuancing and finessing existing opportunities. And I marshal in the TT, so I have an interest in the TT, and I listen to what goes on around me, and I listen to people who know a lot more, with a lot more experience of the TT. I've yet to meet anybody who thinks that we are going to double the population of the Isle of Man for 2 weeks through the arrangements that DED have engaged, the government have engaged. I hope I'm wrong. I suspect I won't be. But that's costing a load of money on a punt. Similarly, the World Series, you don't need to know much about the TT to know that if you made the business punt to have a TT races in Birmingham or Berkshire or somewhere, that local opposition on a number of levels would kill it dead immediately. It would not be a goer. It wouldn't be a goer if you tried to set up at the Isle of Man today if it didn't exist.
Well, everybody's been very wise after the event with that. I mean, do you know? And I'm not saying I thought it was a good idea, but surely that's the job of government, isn't it?
To spend a quarter of £1 million on something that was never going to go anywhere. No, well, I do not think that's the
job. Was it never going to go anywhere, or was it worth investigating? Was it worth looking at?
What's the valuable lessons we've learned from it?
We're not going to do it at the moment, but I mean, Lawrence Kelly said it might go back to it.
There will not be a moment. I will bet you any amount of money you want, there will not be a moment, because it's a non-starter. Instead, that my point to answer your question is, the government should be investing that kind of money, if it's ready cash, to improve the experience for all of our visitors, to make it, but increase it in increments, not in one big sweep.
Isn't the job of government, though, to speculate, to accumulate? Isn't it to look at things like Pinewood, which, I mean, remember, everybody was against the Pinewood idea. Certainly everybody on this programme was against the Pinewood investment. And now it's paying back, you know, with dividends. So it's, that was maybe a good idea after all.
Are we a government or an investment bank?
We are. The government is there. It looks after the public's money and hopefully tries to make some. So, you know, because that way everybody gets a benefit from a bit of trickle down.
Yes, I understand that. I was chair of the MEA. That's what we try to do. We provide a service. We provide a reliable, secure electricity supply at the best cost we can manage. We try to ensure that that's competitive for businesses and it's reliable for households. Yes, we do that. We should do that. But there's a world of difference between providing a service and actually taking going out on a punt and using public money on it. So you're right. In terms of the Pinewood, well, it's come home. That's good. That's a good outcome. Doesn't alter the fact that we should have been much clearer about whether we should be doing that, and also the way we should be doing it. This is public money, and yet the secrecy that surrounded the details of the Pinewood deal at the time were quite alarming.
Okay.
Not alarming because there's anything particularly wrong about it. I'm not suggesting anything corrupt, but what I am suggesting is be open. Be clear about what you're trying to do and be clear what the cost and what the risk is to the public purse.
So what about the £50 million development fund then? Do you think that that's a bad idea? Do you think that money should be spent on other things? Or do you think that, again, it's right that government, you know, you're saying that we need to grow the economy, so surely this is a good way to do it, isn't it?
I'm saying we need to grow the economy in a particular focused manner, so we don't just grow it in a low-wage, high-employer entities coming to the Isle of Man, because that would be bad for the Isle of Man. So we need to focus on niches. Those niche developments will require grant support or some public funding support. Yes, we should. Should we have the... So should we be doing that? Yes, we should, but it should be very focused. And I have to say the DTI, and I'm sure the DED in specific support for specific cases, were always very robust and very clear about what we at that time were trying to achieve, and we had a very clear return on the investment that we were seeking.
What do you think about things like the way that government works in the Isle of Man? I mean, that's something that's been debated now for as long as I can remember, certainly. But recently there's been talk about whether or not MLCs should be popularly elected or not. This is on the back of the Liz Fenn report. You will have read that. Have you got any particular observations?
In specific regard to the Legislative Council, my experience and my opinion is formed by that experience has changed. My initial view is the Legislative Council provided a pool of experience and a potential check and balance to the keys where the government invariably had an overwhelming majority to any excesses. If that was their role, then I've been disappointed that they've not been showing any evidence of performing in that way.
Okay.
And accordingly, and particularly, you have to say, I would say that having knocked on doors in West Douglas in the by-election, having spoken to lots of people, they are invariably unimpressed and unhappy that people they elect to the Keys take what is perceived by many people in the electorate as a cop-out route into Legislative Council. The upshot of all of that is we need to look at the role of Legislative Council. Are they fulfilling it? If not, what's the point of keeping a Legislative Council if they're not there to perform a valid role and actually undertake that role.
I can see the arguments both for and against it being popularly elected, and you touched earlier on the fact that, you know, the government probably in the next House needs to take some unpopular decisions. That's always the problem with democracy, isn't it? In that if you're an elected representative of the people, how much of the time are you doing what you think people want you to do, and how many times can you actually go along with what you think is the right thing yourself, even though it might be unpalatable?
Well, clearly, if you look at some of the existing administration, you can do all the latter. You can just go along with anything which is popular and put off any unpopular, unpleasant decision making until after the next administration. That's a particularly attractive option if you're not going to actually be around after the next administration, in the next administration. The balance you have to strike is a personal one. Do you want to be trusted? Do you want to be respected? Or do you want to be popular? You tend not to be able to do all three.
Does democracy work? I mean, I'm looking now at Donald Trump, likely the next president of the USA. I'm looking at Brexit, which, you know, nobody got the result that they expected. These are direct results of democracy. So does democracy work? Or sometimes, you know, should we leave decisions like this to people who are more informed than maybe the general electorate are?
Well, I think Churchill summed it up, and I'm sorry I'm paraphrasing, but democracy is not perfect. But it's the best we've got.
Yes.
What's the better option? I know you, Josh, on air about being a benign dictator.
Oh, yeah, benevolent dictator for life, yeah.
Yes. Well, we haven't tried that in the Isle of Man, and I'm not proposing that. Democracy is the best system that we have, and it works or fails by the quality of the elected member. And the elected members have to be honest about fulfilling their duties first and foremost. And the duties are to the Isle of Man, not to the next election.
You clearly feel that as an independent candidate that you can make a difference in the Isle of Man. Can one man make a difference, really? And I'm not talking about you and your abilities. I'm just talking about there seems to be a reluctance for people to stand for the House of Keys. Various people have said it's because of social media these days, that everybody is being slagged off on social media, so nobody's prepared to put up with that. You are, but, you know, can you really expect to make much of a difference? Or would you look to form alliances if you're elected with other people who think the same way?
The answer to your question is one person, one man, one woman can make very, very little difference on their own. So yes, you do have to form alliances, and people will be allied to you if you're making coherent, sensible, timely points. And they also have to be constructive. It's not enough to simply be negative and pick holes in things. You have to come up with an alternative solution. And that alternative solution, I will guess, for the next administration, certainly for the next half of the next administration, it gives us the opportunity to make some bold, courageous and overdue decisions. So one person will not make a difference on their own, whoever they are, but what they can do is influence people around them to see the wisdom of actually following through the necessary decision making that's required.
That seems to be an important part of what you're saying, that you think that there are tough decisions to be made, but they need to be made. It's no good shying away from them.
Yeah, absolutely, because the road we're on at the moment is inevitably towards bankruptcy.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that for dramatic effect. I mentioned earlier, I'm born in England because my parents had to leave the Isle of Man. You know, we on the Isle of Man, it makes me smile when we talk about austerity. I mean, look around you. We don't know what austerity is. You talk to people who've lived through the war, who've lived through the 1950s, sure, who know what winter work schemes are, having to leave the Isle of Man to simply get a basic standard of living. That they're austere times. So we are living in good times. We want to maintain that to the best we can. But we cannot delude ourselves that carrying on in the manner that we are at the moment is sustainable.
Most working people will not have seen much of a rise in the standard of living. In fact, just the reverse over the last 10 years, probably now. We seem to have been through a period of, all right, austerity is different depending on which way you look at it, but, you know, reasonably austere times where money's been tight. Do you see an end to that? Can you see light at the end of the tunnel for the people of the Isle of Man?
Yes, and I think we should remind ourselves that we live in the Isle of Man, which is a beautiful place. It's a lovely community. It's a safe community. We invest in community activities. We invest in community ethos. So our schools, our community activities mean that it's a great place to live and work. We have risen through bigger challenges than those that we're facing at the moment, but the challenge that we face particularly at the moment is that we have a government infrastructure which is, in my opinion, too large, and we need to address that. That's not to say there'll necessarily be swathes of job losses, but it will be that jobs will be done differently, and some jobs which don't add value will need to be addressed, and we'll need to contract those away. Either let other people do them if there is a role for them, or stop doing them.
We've got 20 seconds left. You will be knocking on doors already, I'm sure. What are the big issues that people are talking to you about on the doorstep very quickly?
The big issues for the Isle of Man is the economy, and it's about sustainability and how that will impact on us all if we don't make the fundamental considerations and decision-making which I'm describing.
And is that what people are saying to you, or is this what you're saying to them?
No, that's what people are saying to me, and they're not stupid. They expected to have to do this decision-making in the first part of this administration, and now this is a last chance saloon.
All right. Candidate for Douglas East, Quintin Gill, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Keep up to date with the latest House of Keys general election 2016 coverage on manxradio.com.